whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Texans Chargers tomorrow, 3:30 kick, 12:30 Texans countdown gets started. You can hear everything right here on Sports Radio 610. I think the biggest matchup in this game, biggest key to this game, is the Texans defensive line, specifically their edge rushers, Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. And this is going to be a great matchup. Rashawn Slater, who's dealing with an injury, but it looks like he's going to play. Didn't play in Week 18. I think they were just trying to make sure he got healthy.
Well, he got the injury popped up in pregame.
Oh,
was,
yeah.
And it was during warmups.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So that's right.
That's why there was so much mystery about what the... So that, I was very disappointed with Rashawn Slater. I was disappointed with him when he practiced on Tuesday. I was like, it's just like you, Rashawn Slater.
Why are
you trying so hard? You
bum. And then Joe Alt on the other side. That's going to be a fun matchup against Will Anderson Jr. and...
Yeah. Rashawn Slater.
And Will, against Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter.
Sorry.
Here's D'Amico Ryans on the Texans D-line versus the Chargers O-line.
With our defensive line versus their offensive line, that'll be the key matchup of the game. Like, they've done a really good job of protecting Justin all year. And for us, we've gotten at the passer pretty good all year. So it's going to – they're good, we're good. So that's what playoff football is about. Like, who's going to win that matchup? We'll have a lot of opportunities versus their guys. But Justin also does a good job of getting the ball out, making good decisions, as I said earlier. So we're up for the challenge.
So, yeah, they get rid of the ball quickly. Justin Herbert he's very careful with the football. He's only thrown 3 interceptions. 2 of the 3 interceptions were when he was under duress. There was only 1 interception that was just a bad throw, which you go over the course of the season, and okay, there's only 1 time where he had an errant throw where he was just stable in the pocket. That's pretty good. This was almost a record-breaking season. It's the second fewest interceptions by a quarterback who's had over 500 attempts in a season. So he's very careful with the football. The flip side of it is that, all right, man, the Texans at home in Energy Stadium, if you can just have amnesia about the Ravens game, they've turned some really good quarterbacks, and some like Tua, who's careful with the football, they've turned them into turnover machines.
Mm-hmm.
The Jared Goff, 5 interceptions. Josh Allen wasn't a turnover. You know, Josh Allen didn't throw in. He was 30% completion, but easily could have had 2 interceptions early in that game.
Both to Azeez Alshire.
Azeez Alshire mishandled a couple that it wasn't like he didn't throw turnover-worthy plays in that game.
And 2 to Azeez. Yeah.
So that's what you got to hope for, is the best version of the Texans' pass rush and opportunistic backfield and all of that, and get the worst version of Justin Herbert.
Yep. I think that's the biggest key. I think that's the biggest matchup in this game. Now, let's skip down on the offensive side for the Texans. They need to find they got to find some weaponry other than Nico Collins in the passing game. And who knows? Maybe it's Joe Mixon out of the backfield. Dalton Schultz is the one that of all these guys that CJ probably has the most, other than Nico, that's available. Probably has the most compatibility or chemistry with right now.
The biggest one. That's an X factor is Deontay Johnson.
Yep.
And you're starting to see in the previews of this game, I saw Charles Davis talk to the Houston Chronicle, did an interview with them, and he pointed out Deontay Johnson is a potential X factor here. I mean, the thing is, it's easy to say, okay, Nico Collins or Joe Mixon has to go off. But even when that happens, they haven't consistently churned out points.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's going to be a hero that emerges, Deontay Johnson's kind of like the scintillating unknown X factor that, okay, if you could get the best version of Deontay Johnson, then this might really do something. Or at the very least, if the presence of Deontay Johnson opens it up more for Xavier Hutchinson, for John Metchie, for those guys. But I guess without even having a 100-yard receiving game or something, Deontay Johnson's presence and him actually being a part of the offense might be a big X factor.
Yep. Here's D'Amico Ryans earlier this week. How confident are you in Deontay Johnson contributing? this week in the playoffs?
With Deontay, I was really impressed with his last week of practice. I thought he picked up on the things we were asking him to do. I thought he really had really nice catches, nice plays throughout practice, and he got in the game. We were able to get him a little involved in the game as well, and I thought he handled himself really well. We'll start to continue to feed him more, see how he can help us. The skill set, the talent is there. It's just a matter of him just integrating into our offense and making sure, you know, we put him in positions to where we can accentuate his talents, because he's a talented player. He's made a ton of plays in this league, and it's exciting to see what he's able to do on the practice field. So I'm excited to see that come to life and on game day. So he's done a great job. Happy to work with Deontay. He's been a pleasure to work with.
The two guys, if you kind of combine the Tank Dell elements and the Stephon Diggs elements of Deontay Johnson, that's what you have. Like on the positive side of things, I would say that, look, he has a electric athleticism that the other receivers other than Nico don't really have. So that's good. So you go, okay, you replace a little bit of that with Tank Dell. With Stephon Diggs, I think on the negative side of things, okay, Stephon Diggs, awesome guy. We saw the best version of him, and we saw him he was on a 1-year contract. Most places, when Stephon Diggs was in Minnesota, when he was in Buffalo, at the onset, he was an awesome guy.
The marriage was cool the first couple years.
But when you hear people talk about Deontay Johnson, he's not as good a player as Stephon Diggs, but it sounds kind of like the similar stuff. Like, he's an awesome guy, but sometimes just can't get out of his own way.
Yeah.
So that's not really our concern, because he's likely a short timer, or even he isn't, he's going to be on his best behavior, not just to maybe re-sign with the Texans, but to show the rest of the league.
Yeah.
And I think you could see in his body language last week, it was like, okay, he was eager. Should have fair caught that punt return, but like, he's going to do everything he can. So I think you get the best version of Deontay Johnson without perhaps whatever the other baggage is, or whatever leads to the discontent. I'm not worried about that.
The Ravens thing with Deontay Johnson is just so weird to me. Like, that whole saga, because Deontay Johnson actually played some good football in Carolina.
Yeah.
Reportedly. It's not like I watched all these snaps of Deontay Johnson.
They had so many things otherwise going on with the offense.
But he was getting open. Yeah. He had a couple good games. You know, he had at least one 100-yard receiving game. I think it was a game they won. So he played some good football, but they ejected from him and traded him. And they traded him to the Ravens for nothing. It was like Deontay Johnson in a sixth for a fifth. It was one of those pick swap things. And so my thought was, okay, well, that's the team that goes and gets malcontents like that. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they're making huge plays for you in important games. And he just never got on the field from the get-go.
Right.
And it's not like that's a great receiving core. Zay Flowers is really good. He finally, like, the franchise still, Zay Flowers literally never had a Pro Bowl receiver in their history.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first. So, you know, Rashad Bateman's a good player. Mm-hmm. But it's not a great receiver. It's certainly not a receiving core I look at and go, Deontay Johnson. A team goes and willingly gets Deontay Johnson on their roster, and he can't get on the field for them.
It feels like the kind of situation where, you're going to get the best version of Deontay Johnson because he's on this offense that's really good, and like Lamar Jackson is taking these other guys and getting the best version of these receivers.
Yeah.
Because Lamar and Derrick Henry are just such a weapon.
Yeah.
It's very, very curious.
It's strange. He got 5 targets total in his entire time as a Baltimore Raven.
And I think that, you know, D'Amico always talks about how it's a clean slate when guys show up. But you do have to take into account, okay, you get some intel about what went right or what went wrong. And I don't know, just hypothetically, maybe the Ravens just expected him to pick up more of the playbook or whatever it might be. When you're on a short time frame like this, I think you treat it almost like a college coach that runs an air raid offense. Like, all right, this guy's going to do a couple things, and we want him to do them really well.
Yes.
And we're not going to ask him to know the whole, like, have a gigantic route tree or something. I'm guessing the last couple weeks have been all about getting a limited package that he does really, really well.
Deontay package. Yeah. Deontay, text message. Deontay Johnson, 1 catch, 78 yards, and a touchdown. That'd be enough for me.
That's enough, yes. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Think about how many times this year, Texans, and last year, the Texans won games partly because the offense wasn't doing well, but Nico Collins had an 80-yard touchdown reception.
No doubt.
That's all you need.
Yep. Text message, Deontay looked amazing last week. His routes were crisp, and he had separation.
Yeah.
Amazing feels like a little much.
Amazing is a bit much, just given that, it was 2 receptions for 9 yards. Now, Mills couldn't. I'm not even going to blame Davis because everything is new and all that, but like, he couldn't connect with him. He had a bad throw on the one. didn't connect. You could say he overthrew Deontay Johnson. Maybe I don't know. Like, but he was open. He had separation. And that's the biggest thing. I remember during the draft, before the draft last year, the one thing that both D'Amico and Caserio said when asked what do they look for in receivers, it's separation. Separation. We want separation.
Yeah.
And that's what Deontay Johnson gets.
Yeah.
When it comes to the comfort level with, you know, CJ throwing the ball to Mechie or Xavier Hutchinson, you can tell that, especially on some of those outs, that he doesn't quite trust those guys as much as a Tank Dell or a Nico Collins. Mm-hmm. I think with Deontay Johnson, he creates such great separation that CJ probably, I could see CJ feeling more comfortable with Deontay more quickly. And that's where I think, even though it's only been 2 weeks of practice, I'm optimistic that CJ is going to be comfortable throwing the ball to Deontay. If it's a little bit of a gray area throw or something, I think he throws it.
It feels like, if I were CJ, just from observing, for me, it feels like he's got to be perfect throwing to those other guys.
Yeah.
You know, like he's got to be pimp because they're usually got guys draped all over
them. And CJ's in this mode where, like, he knows that he needs to be careful, but, like, oh, what am I going to do? The pass protection's not great. So one of the things that's ailed this Texans offense is the quick game and being able to get rid of the ball quickly for a variety of factors. Deontay, like, even if it's only three or four times in the game, maybe if it means a couple of two or three extra first downs because he's open immediately, that's a big change for this offense.
The best case scenario, big picture in this, is if you and I, once the Texans season is over, whenever that may be, is if you and I are doing a topic in here where we're like, should they bring Deontay Johnson back?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like, if he does enough to where you've got to think about it, to bring him back.
Well, in line with what that listener just texted in, he said one touchdown, one big touchdown, whatever. Likewise, I'm almost thinking about, like, forget touchdowns. If it is just those few extra first downs, if it's an ability of CJ to negate the poor pass protection with getting rid of the ball quickly.
Yeah.
We just haven't been able to, his options when they try to, you know, when they, there's times where, yeah, he'd love to be getting rid of the ball quickly, but everybody's covered underneath.
Nobody's open.
Nobody's getting open quickly.
Yeah, nobody's open. Text message, David Culley-led Texans team beat Herbert and the Chargers to keep them out of the playoffs back in 2021. I remember that game. I think it was the day after Christmas. It was late in the season. They blew out the Chargers. Herbert threw a pick six in that game. The reason I'm reading that text, because that was definitely a game where it felt like, oh, the Chargers are still the Chargers.
Yeah.
They controlled their own destiny to get to the postseason, and they lose to a David Culley-coached Texans team in, like, week 16.
Yeah.
Like, late in the season, they lose to the Texans. And I guess that would be, like, maybe another question about the Chargers. Like, has Harbaugh been able to, like, if the Chargers were a washcloth and the Charger negative mystique of finding ways to lose was water, has he been able to wring all of that out of the dish rag? You know what I mean?
Like, what year was that? That
was in 2021.
That was Brandon Staley, right? Yeah,
I think it was Staley,
It was either Lynn or Staley. Either of those guys are not Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
That was Brandon Staley. That's the difference, I think, right there, is that Herbert's operating better. Even though his stats aren't as prolific as in some of his early seasons, he's operating better as a quarterback. The sum total of it all with Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman, I think. It's been the right mix, and he's matured since then. So, good point. But, like, historically, it's not the same as beating this Chargers team.
No. I do feel like Harbaugh. I guess we'll find out. Like, they won three games down the stretch to clinch the 5 seed. That's something that recent Charger teams would not have done.
Whoever the coach was in 2021, it wasn't Don Coryell.
It was Staley. Yeah. You were right. Yeah, it was not Don Coryell.
Yeah.
That would be scary. That was back in the day.
He'd been like 97 years old.
Hey, right? Dan Fouts threw for 4,000 yards this year.
Yeah.
That was crazy back in the day. It was a madhouse. Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Football Friday. All right. Why the Texans will win a Super Bowl, why the Texans won't win a Super Bowl.
Oh.
We'll dig into each of these. The Athletic did this for all 14 playoff teams. So we'll dig into that, and we'll do that coming up next. But first, you got a little injury report.
Oh, the injury report?
Yeah.
We've got the injury report already?
Right there in the rundown.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at the fact that it was Mokarem. I got all excited.
Yeah.
Mokarem injury report. for today. Shaq Mason's the only guy who's definitively out for the Texans. The questionables are Denico Autry with a knee. Foley Fatakasi is not even questionable. He's practicing. He's going to play with full participation. Christian Harris, questionable, but he had full participation. John Metchie, same thing, questionable, full participation. Those are the guys you got to really care about this weekend.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, I'm here to listen to any argument that gets the Texans into the Super Bowl. You know, if I see a headline of an article and it says why each team will make the Super Bowl,
yeah,
and why they won't.
Why they'll lose or not make the Super Bowl. Yeah. Why, not lose the Super Bowl.
Why each AFC playoff team will win the Super Bowl and why they won't. And this is The Athletic and this is Austin Mock.
Yeah.
So I was very intrigued by the why the Texans will, for sure.
Yeah, the will. I was a little let down by the will because I looked through the article and he had this for several other teams. Felt like this part of it was phoning it in a little bit. His key is that CJ Stroud gets hot. All right, thanks.
You're telling me the league is about quarterback?
Yeah,
play?
Yeah, because you know what his key for the Chargers was? Justin Herbert gets hot.
Okay. See, I didn't read all the other teams because I don't care about
I looked
them.
At the Chargers and then I'm like, all right. And then there was one other one in there. Like, all right, I get it. So then I went to the, like, why the Texans will lose. And it's hard for me to get mad at Austin Mock about this because it makes sense. It matches the eyeball test. He's got the stats that back it up. When looking at blown blocks in the running game and pressures allowed in the passing game, no offensive line has blown a block as often as the Texans at 28.5% of plays.
Oh, wow.
The next worst team is the Patriots at 26%. So the Texans are, they're 2 percentage points worse than the Patriots at blown
blocks.
And
that's a bad line in New England.
Yeah.
That's a bad line.
Yeah. So that matches the eyeball test. Like, sometimes I get skeptical of stuff when they talk about guys blowing blocks because you don't always know for sure who, when it's a mental error, you don't know, you don't 100% know, even if you think it looks like you should know, you don't know exactly what the responsibilities were. But yeah, there have been enough completely free runners. There have been enough guys who have definitely just gotten beaten one-on-one very, very quickly. That is a death blow when you're going up against good team after good team after good team in the playoffs.
This would be my, maybe not a counterpoint, but if Austin Mock were sitting here,
yeah,
this would be my follow-up question to him because he probably has a subscription to FTN data where he found that number, 28.5%. That's a year-long stat, right? It's for the whole season.
Yes.
I would say, tell me what it's been since Tytus Howard moved to left guard.
That's where I think the...
Last four games.
And it's not like the offensive line has all of a sudden been marauders or anything. But the really infuriating miscommunications and missed assignments, those have gotten better as the season's gone along. So, yeah, I'd like to see weighted, like, how it looks now versus before. And but the sum total of it is the offense as a whole for the second half of the season was one of the worst offenses in the league. And a lot of it is just due to inadequate offensive line play. I think that the reason for hope, hopefully, is that, yeah, they have cleaned up a lot of, like, the glaringly bad stuff. But then also, I do think in looking back over the last 4 weeks in which Tytus Howard has been playing guard, there have been some good moments where Tytus is doing some really good things. Tytus working with Laremy on one side or with Jarrett Patterson on the other side. They look like they have a better awareness of the scheme and what their responsibilities are. When, you remember early in the year at various times, they would just leave defensive tackles completely alone. While both guys worked up to a linebacker.
I do.
We've seen a lot less of that. Yeah. We've seen some good plays where, hey, Tytus is going to take the defensive tackle. Laremy moves up to the linebacker. Damian Pierce goes 92 yards for a touchdown.
Yeah, yeah.
We've just seen a lot better evidence of clean football. So that's the, if I had to counter argue, like, I think he makes the right point for why the Texans won't win the Super Bowl. The antidote would be hopefully that this lineup of offensive linemen is something that the Texans finally stumbled into as, like, the correct lineup.
Be average.
Yeah.
Man, I'm just asking you to be average.
Right. Don't have negative plays.
Yeah.
Because the other big glaring stat is that the Texans, Joe Mixon's been hit in the backfield more than any other players that have had a certain number of carries.
Yeah.
Like, there's just too many times where they're extreme negative plays. Just get 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I'm over the moon with 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I'll put you up there with the Earl Campbell days.
I mean, it pains me a little bit to say that because this is a show that is striving to be the best in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And yet our advice to somebody, millionaires, is to say, be average. Just be average.
Well, no. Because you're not telling the team to be average. You're telling one aspect of the team. Any Super Bowl winning team has various position groups that are just average.
I know, it still
hurts. There's nobody out there that has all pros at all 22 starting positions.
I know, it just hurts. That's all.
No, it doesn't hurt. No, you're looking at what's the recipe.
Yeah.
You know, like what is the thing that makes that thing go?
Okay.
You can only be really good at so many things, but you hope that the rest of the guys are average at least.
And by possibly being average, then the whole totality can be the best in the world. Still.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay.
I don't feel like it's a complicated, theory.
It's just as somebody who strives to be the best in the world ourselves since January 1st, just to give advice to be average.
Right,
but
okay, in
bit.
Any given profession, if you try to be the best at every single part of that profession, you're not going to be the best in the profession.
Yeah.
There's going to be some parts that you do average, but the things that you do astoundingly well. So you just need to be good enough at the stuff that you're average at.
Okay.
The stuff that you do astoundingly well has a chance to shine.
Fair. I'll workshop it and see how I feel.
Okay.
Okay, so let me put you on the spot a little bit then. Because I'm with you. The citing of better quarterback play is a lazy reason to say why they could win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So if you had to write this article that Austin Mock just wrote, why all these teams will win the Super Bowl and why they won't. But it's got the caveat of you can't mention the quarterback in the why you will.
Okay.
What would the Texans' reason be that they will win the Super Bowl?
Defensive turnovers. Just taking the ball away at a lunatic fringe rate. Just absolute maniacal banshees out there that are taking the ball away. And there's
and we've seen that.
For that. Right, yeah, we've seen that.
They're
still in the top. They're at least in the top five. I don't know where they are in takeaways.
We've seen way more of that than we've seen CJ play at the level that Austin Mock is talking about.
Right. Again, like I don't think that's rocket science either. I think 90% of Texans fans feel like, if they're gonna make a playoff run, it's gonna have to involve a bunch of takeaways. Now, so this Texans defense is much improved, and they're very good in a lot of ways. They're not an elite defense though. Just like the simple scoring defense, they're not an elite defense. So if they make a Super Bowl run based on their defense, it's not going to be like it was with Tampa or the first time the Ravens won the Super Bowl necessarily. They're not that caliber of defense. But there have been Super Bowl runs like Lovie Smith's Bears where they made it to a Super Bowl mostly. I mean, Rex Grossman was their quarterback, and they were a very, very good defense, but mostly because they took the ball away so much.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like they were not like that Ravens defense or the Bears defense back in the day. But they were really good at taking
their
ball away.
Their defense won games.
I
was living in Chicago for that team. I watched them every weekend. There were games where there were way more games where Rex Grossman was abjectly awful. Like made this year's version of CJ Stroud look like an MVP. And they still won, I think, 11 or 12 games that year.
To go with the Bears too. How far did Dick Duron go? Because he had a similar defense that was very opportunistic, and they didn't have a good offense, and they made it deep into the playoffs one year with that. It's hard to sustain. No matter how good you are, it's hard to turn over good teams that many times every single week.
Yes, no doubt.
It's like going up against a baseball team that's got stud pitchers. Like, okay, you might have one or two games where you rake, but you can't expect to do it every, in a 7-game series.
Yep, that's right. So we have a text in. Perfect scenario for this weekend's wild card that we need. Broncos win in Buffalo, Steelers win in Baltimore, and then the Texans win and get a home game. It's fun to dream about that. I will say this is all I'm asking, is that they win the game this weekend, because it will just make watching the rest of the weekend a whole lot more fun when your team is still involved.
Way more fun. You start getting sour grapes.
Like, I can't even look forward to Sunday and Monday yet until I know how that Texans game went. And yet when you look at it, like you look at a menu, it's like looking at a menu where like there's all these like awesome things. I'm like, I can't even get excited about all these steaks right here.
It's like the year,
because I've still got to go do a 5K.
The worst was the year the Texans lost to the Chiefs in the playoffs, and then the next week the Chiefs got destroyed in the playoffs.
Did
they lose to the Colts?
That was 2015.
Okay.
I don't remember.
I just remember thinking like, oh, you can't even say like, well, at least we lost to a good team. No.
It wouldn't have been the Colts. That was the year after the Colts made the AFC title.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was 2015 was Denver and the Patriots in the AFC title game. So it was one of those two teams. That's who they would have played. But yeah, 30-0. Nile Davis with the kickoff return on the opening play of the game. I'm like, oh, okay, well, there goes our little winning streak in the wild card round. I was used to winning these games.
Oh, Dick Drown only made it to the divisional. They lost in the divisional round. Look at how low my standards are.
Loser.
I just like Dick Drown. Yeah.
Are you excited about any of these games in particular other than the Texans game this weekend? I've got them in front of me here if you want me to.
I'm going
to
give you on a scale of 1 to 10 how excited
I am. Okay, I'm
going to
rapid fire them. You ready? Steelers at Ravens. It's Saturday night on Amazon.
I want the Ravens to destroy the Steelers.
Why?
I don't know.
It's better for the Texans if the Steelers win.
I'm not thinking that way. I'm not in that mode right now. Okay. All right. Okay. You know what? You're right. I got to come back to reality.
You were when you wanted the three seed so bad.
I know. I got to come back to reality and remember.
Hold on. I'm intrigued. Why did you want them to kill the Steelers so bad?
I don't know. I think it's the Russell Wilson thing.
Totally
or something.
Could be. That's the right answer. I'm just curious.
I know there's something about it though. It's almost like something. You know, something when something bad's happening. There's a part of you sometimes. They're like, fine, yes, make it as bad. I want all the pain.
But your excitement level about the game.
Excitement level actually to watch that.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah.
Even though I don't expect the Steelers to win the game, I think it's going to be more interesting than you would objectively think about it. So I'm going to put a 7 on that.
They're the biggest dog of the weekend, the Steelers. They're a 10-point underdog.
I think there's still a good chance it'll be a fight.
All right, Broncos and Bills. That's the early game on Sunday. Oh, the Broncos have to play an early game in Buffalo on Sunday. They're a 9-point underdog. What's your intrigue level on that one?
I'm a 4 on that.
4.
I like. You think the Bills I've grudgingly acknowledged how well Bo Nix has played this year.
Yeah.
And it's going to be kind of, I guess, sad to see them get destroyed by the Bills.
You think that's too big for them?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you on that. The middle game on Sunday is the Eagles hosting the Packers. The Eagles are a 5-point favorite. I'm looking at the screen in our studio right now. So they've got Jordan Love up there on the graphic right there. So I'm assuming he's playing. Yeah. He was dealing with some elbow injury, I guess.
That's about a 4 for that one, too.
Yeah.
Now, given the I enjoy watching playoff football in general, but like 10 is like a couple of these later ones we're going to see.
Sunday night.
Yeah.
Buccaneers hosting the Commanders.
Boy, that's excitement versus intrigue versus, I'm going to go with a 7 on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the reclamation project and story of Baker Mayfield, even though he still throws a boatload of interceptions.
or the reclamation project of the Commanders franchise.
The entire damn franchise.
Yeah.
And Jaden Daniels and all of that. Would I give it a 7? Yeah.
7?
No, I'm going to amp that up to an 8.
Yeah.
Partly because I haven't watched the Commanders. Much like with Bo Nix, I was just way too skeptical for too long with the Commanders that it was all going to fall apart. So I didn't watch them as much as I probably should have.
Over-under on that game is 51. So there's going to be a lot of points scored. I think that's going to be a fun game. That has a chance to be the most fun game out of all these. And then the Monday night game, which the intrigue there is more about geography than anything else, the Rams hosting the Vikings in Glendale, Arizona because of the wildfires in California.
That one, given the Vikings are coming off just a complete letdown versus a team that if they make a run, they'll face again.
Yeah.
But given the Rams, I just can't get excited about the Rams these days. I'm going to say a 3 on that one.
I don't know
that might be my least favorite one of the bunch.
Yeah, because I don't know that these other games I can get worked up to pick a side here. I'm just tired of the Rams. I'm tired of people like Mike Greenberg and on TV trying to do that thing where you sound smart by saying the Rams are the team that nobody wants to play.
Yeah.
When in fact, the only time they've done anything in the postseason was that Super Bowl run like 3 years ago.
You know, the other part about the Vikings is that they dismantled the Texans. Sam Darnold looked like the new Johnny Unitas. And yet, like, now I've watched enough of Sam Darnold to realize, like, okay, he's a poor man's Jared Goff.
Yeah.
I don't know if come crunch time or when it really matters that he's the guy.
Fat face Sam Darnold is still in there somewhere.
Yeah. But
and
I don't hate him like you do.
Usually.
Like, you should hate watch that because you want to see him single-handedly be the reason they don't win.
I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed watching him the sheer futility of him in the red zone against the Lions last week was very fun for me to watch.
Like, begging for interference calls that weren't there instead of the fact that you just couldn't throw the ball to Justin freaking Jefferson.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
What's the spread on that one?
Spread on the Rams and the Vikings is Minnesota 2.5. So that team that nobody wants to play is an underdog.
I guess I'm a Rams fan in that game. Although I'm looking forward to the rematch of the Vikings versus the Lions.
Yeah.
Real quandary for me.
What's that?
It's a real quandary
for me. It's a big quandary. Yeah. Well, the coaching matchup is fun too because Kevin O'Connell is a Sean McVay disciple.
Yeah.
A little teacher-student thing going on there. All right. It's a good slate of games, man. It's a fun weekend between college Thursday, college Friday, and NFL Saturday, Sunday, Monday. You know, we've never had this before. Mm-hmm. Like, this is in contention for, like, the best chunk of calendar of the year. Like, I'm into all this stuff, man. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, Seth is going to make his prediction on this game. I made mine a little bit earlier. 23-20 Texans was mine. That was a little bit earlier. Seth will give his prediction on Chargers and Texans. And we'll go through the receipts. These are the receipts that you need to hold if you are a Texans fan or if you're a Texans staffer or player who's listening. We'll go through those coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Right, Payne and Pendergast, just to put a bow on something from the previous segment, we were talking about playoffs a few years ago. The Texans got blown out by the Chiefs in 2015, 30-0. The next week, the Chiefs lost to the Patriots. We had a texter say, I think the next week the Chiefs blew a huge lead against the Indianapolis Colts. They were up 38-10. That was 2 years prior.
Yeah.
That was in the wild card round in 2013. And Andrew Luck led the Colts on a 28-point second half comeback to win 45-44.
I think the one I was thinking of was when the Texans lost to the Colts, and then the next week the Colts got just torn up by the Chiefs.
Got blown out by the Chiefs.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you were thinking of. Yep. Yep.
That was the one where I felt like there was a gif I saw. Somebody had described the game as somebody like jumping off of a house onto a trampoline.
Yeah.
And it was magnificent. But they fell off onto like something soft, like that cushioned the blow a little bit. But then they fell off of that, like onto the ground. It was like, they're like, oh, they're like, oh. So like, because for a moment I was like, well, maybe at least the Colts can do something. Maybe they're a good team. Like, oh, nope, they suck too.
Nope.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. So we lost to a team that sucks.
It's an AFC South thing. Once again. All right. Hey, real quick, before we get your prediction, let's just run through here. The receipts from this week. I want people, as we head into tomorrow, to remember these people. As the Texans are getting ready to face the Chargers at 3:30 tomorrow.
Talking about the Italians again?
Hmm?
Are you talking about the Italians again?
No, I'm not. These people? No, let me look. Rex Ryan, Ian Rapoport. Nope.
Okay.
Here was Rex Ryan earlier this week talking about the Chargers and the Texans and the bye week that the Chargers get.
Yeah, Chargers face it. I never realized they get a bye. Oh, wait, they got to play the Texans. What's the difference? Texans offense is struggling so bad, they can't protect the quarterback. But look, the Chargers' number one scoring defense in the NFL going against that offense, woo, get ready for the next round.
That's Rex just trying to be Rex. The whole sum total, everything he said about the Texans, you know, weaknesses and the Chargers' strengths, that's all true. But the fact of the matter is, if the Texans were facing the Ravens again or something like that, then yes, you can say that. I wouldn't get angry at it.
No.
I would still say, look, it's the NFL. I mean, come on. But
this is silly.
This is silly because it's like the most objective observers you could find, either the computers or Vegas, is going to tell you, all right, this is about a field goal game.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not a bye. Where I actually felt disrespect in that take was, that's a diss of the Texans defense. You want to call it a bye week?
Time.
Look, win or lose, there's a good chance that the Texans defense is going to injure a couple of your players because they're one of the hardest hitting teams out there, and Azeez Alshire will be on the field. Like, they're a violent bunch in all the right ways, in all of the socially acceptable ways. The Texans defense are psychotic, hard hitting badasses. So that's not a bye. So that's where you can go die, Rex Ryan.
There you go.
All right?
There you go. Yeah. There it is.
I can't put quite the same oomph into the go die because he's a lot closer to death than a lot of us. So I'm like, all right,
that's one where it can happen over the weekend and you'd feel bad.
Yeah,
about
like
it.
I don't say go die to people like messing around at the hospital
now,
or anything. You know,
it would feel pretty. You'd be like, come on, but my powers are pretty strong here, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but again, it would be kind of like, I predicted the sun was going to rise this morning. Yeah, everybody dies. I'm not putting a timetable on
that
it.
That is true.
Just, yeah.
All right. That's first receipt. In the spirit of the holiday season, keeping receipts. Here's Ian Rapoport, receipt number two.
Everyone's sort of laughed about the Texans getting the Saturday early game. It's kind of the Texans' slot, and everyone sort of assumes that they're going to come out and lose. And I know that the Texans have looked uneven this year, but if there's one perfect opportunity for them to give everybody the metaphorical middle digit, this would be it, right? I mean, the Chargers are good, but certainly the Texans have been just as good. The Texans have been a little uneven offensively. C.J. Stroud has thrown too many interceptions for anyone's liking, but the talent for sure is there. It is a perfect opportunity for the Texans to come out and get a win that absolutely no one expects them to get.
This is where these guys are being disingenuous people. Because, like, honestly, they're like, no, everyone is not saying that. You guys are saying that so you can have a hot take. Like, it's, yes, the Chargers should be favored in this game. That makes sense. That's a, but like everyone is not looking at this game and thinking like, oh, yep, here we go. And, you know, like, this, what the hell are you talking about, Ian Rappaport? Like, what on earth are you talking about?
I was like,
this is being painted out like it's the Texans playing the Ravens again. If the Texans were playing the Ravens again, hell yes.
Yeah.
I would not have any issue with that take. It's like, I don't believe you. I don't believe Rex Ryan. I don't believe Ian Rappaport. I think you guys are stuffed shirts doing what your producers tell you to do because you're money-grubbing whores, that's what this is.
In my mind, I'm going, what was Seth about to call Ian Rappaport? Oh.
Cockamamie.
That's
what I was going to say. They're cockamamies.
It's like, oh, that. Okay, last one. We haven't played this one yet. This is Jason Kelce, who's now one of these stuffed suits and talking heads of which you speak.
Yeah.
This was him on his New Heights podcast with his brother Travis Kelce, kind of laying out what his weekend's going to be like watching football.
The one that I'm definitely not watching is Houston versus Chargers. I don't know why. That one's like not even – that's the least interesting game to me. Is that fair?
I'm watching it because I think that's probably who you're playing. Teams I'm going to play. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Oh, if only out of duty. I'm going to watch it out of duty because I have to.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'll go to your sister's wedding, I guess.
How about this? Hey, Jason Kelce, you're the least interesting of all the people on the Monday Night Football studio show right now. In my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, so him talking
I haven't paid attention.
I think Jason Kelce came into media with huge expectations.
Yeah. Oh, Jason. Sorry. For some reason, I was thinking Travis. Yeah.
No, Jason Kelce on the Monday Night Studio show.
He's feeling his way through.
He's been very vanilla so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not burying him or anything like that.
He's stuck in that same boat as Gronk, where I think that they get this guy and they've got a reputation for kind of, you know, Jason Kelce during the Super Bowl parade dressed up like a whatever the hell
mummers,
he was.
The mummers.
Yeah, and all that stuff. And I think that, but then he's trying to be like, no, I'm intellectual. Unless you insult my brother, I'll knock your iPhone out of your hand.
He has a late night show now on ESPN.
A late night show? Like a Conan O'Brien type thing?
Yeah, like a sports version of that.
Oh, really?
Comes out any monologues and stuff.
Really?
I've yet to watch it.
I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And his wife is the person like sitting up in the balcony that he's kind of riffing with a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm intrigued, but I don't like this at all.
Totally intrigued, but the bits and pieces I've watched, I'm like, okay, I'm not going out of my way to watch this.
That feels like when, the Magic Johnson show feels a little bit like that, except that Magic Johnson was a much bigger star than Jason Kelce. Yeah. But you're like, all right, man, like, all right, it lets you know, like, okay, those late night hosts actually have a boatload of ability.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're really good at what they do.
It's hard to do. Now, it's hard to do that role.
They've got a staff of thousands to help them.
Yeah, but that's still, like, the personality is the problem.
Once you're up there, you're by yourself out there.
I feel like that's throwing a 19-year-old into the major leagues to pitch without, like, I don't know, man. That's dicey there.
Yeah, paycheck.
Yeah, I know it's a paycheck, but I feel like Jason Kelce might grow into that role, but that's a hard job.
It is. I've yet to watch the whole thing. Okay, before we get to the guys on In the Loop, the people want your prediction on
this. Okay, look. The Texans haven't scored more than 23 points in a game in the last five games. They've only scored 23 points as an offense once in that time because we had the defensive touchdown last week. So it's really hard for me to say going up against the best scoring defense that all of a sudden they're going to just have a deluge of 28 points or anything.
Right,
right. And I do think the Texans will force a turnover or two that's going to help them out. But I've got the Chargers, although I hope this isn't case. I hope I'm wrong. I've got the Chargers 20-17.
20-17. Yeah. So you got it right. Like right at the number.
Is
so
that what it is? 37?
No, the over under. Yeah, the spread is 3, but you're right. The total is like 43.5.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So 23-20 would be what the experts think. So 20-17, Seth has it. I've got 23-20 Texans. I'm sure the guys on In the Loop will be making predictions later on the show today. If you guys haven't already this week.
No, we have not.
Okay.
No predictions. No, we're the
John Lopez, Reggie Atatula. What's up, boys?
How are you? I was unable to hear Five Reasons I Hate You, so if you could just redo that segment right now.
Okay, I'll give it to you. I'll rattle them off real quick for
you. I'm just hoping that Jim Harbaugh's affinity for milk somehow
shows
up.
Jim Harbaugh, his affinity for milk didn't make it. Jim Harbaugh, this is an old school one that came from a texter, and we played the audio of it. I quickly found the audio of it. People don't realize on the Jim Rome show, Jim Harbaugh called into the Smack-Off back in 1998. He requested a spot in the Smack-Off. This is when he was a quarterback. And Jim Rome, like, he came on for an interview. He's like, Romy, I'd love to be in the Smack-Off. And you know Rome. He's like, oh, we'd love to have you. You're invited.
Right.
And for someone like me who was striving to get invited for 2 years before that, I'm like, hey, I want to be
in. That's my spot.
And I was. That
Maybe
was my,
you should be
that,
an NFL quarterback.
That was my first. That was the first Smack-Off I was in. We replayed the call. It's one of the worst calls ever. It was so bad. He literally says the words, I don't have a whole lot of smack to say today.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was nice. It was like it was whatever the opposite of the Jim Everett moment was. All right, man, if
Rome
you're gonna
have
a moment
killed him.
With right, yeah.
He could have crushed him.
Rome could have killed him?
Could have killed Harbaugh.
Jim Everett. I'm like, I don't know that, Sean.
Yeah, sorry. Pronouns. My bad. No, he could have verbally killed Jim Harbaugh. Yeah. The other ones, Seth has been interacting with Charger fans on his YouTube page.
Not a baby.
All seven of them?
Yeah, and now there's a good. There's at least enough psychotic ones that, like, as I was trying to compliment Justin Herbert, I wasn't complimenting him enough, and I was the worst person in the world.
Sure,
because you don't like the thumbnail of the video was Justin Herbert deserves more credit, and they found reason to get insulted by that. They're in that really annoying, like, you need to give us more respect mode.
Yeah.
They're making me hate Justin Herbert.
Seth's notes on this are great. I'm not reading them on this bullet point for Five Reasons I Hate You. No. Let me see. No, you didn't.
Okay, very good.
The offensive coaching staff for the Chargers is littered with former Texan coaches.
Oh, yeah. That's
you guys have probably pointed this out. Devlin's on there.
Yep.
Andy Bischoff, the former tight ends coach that said that Jeff Driscoll is the most athletic quarterback other than Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
He said that in 2021 into a microphone.
That's a guy that values 40 times way too much.
While wearing a Texans golf shirt in a press conference, he said those words.
It was the most embarrassing thing of that entire era.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it.
I'll be honest. We had a hard time finding hate reasons. Like, I'm not a big Ezekiel Elliott fan. Mm-hmm. They signed Ezekiel. I just hate the whole concept of Ezekiel Elliott getting let go from the Cowboys so he could go sign with a contender somewhere.
That
concept doesn't compute to me.
As far as your, Jim Harbaugh and his quirkiness, Jim Harbaugh is at an age now where his quirkiness just makes it endears him.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's like if a young straight guy is wearing magenta pants, I'm like, all right, what are you on about? Versus an old guy's wearing magenta pants, you're like, I want to have a whiskey with this guy.
We really do enable him though, and I think it's because it feels like it's very genuine. Like there's it's not insincere in any way, but he is a weirdo. He's a consummate weirdo.
Did y'all see the Nico Collins telling the story in the media scrum this week of when Harbaugh came to visit him? I couldn't hear the lead up to it because the audio just wasn't great. It's, one of those locker room scrums. But apparently on the visit, might have been at the swimming pool at the school.
Oh, the 10 meter.
He did a cannonball in his clothes off of the high dive.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh did.
Yeah.
What a quirky weirdo.
With his hat, whistle, everything.
Yeah.
The clothes that he wears every day. And like he dresses like a cartoon character.
And Nico ended up going there.
Yeah.
And you remember he slept on Nico Collins' floor of his home with Pep Hamilton when they were recruiting him.
I just thought of a reason why I hate the Chargers.
Okay, good.
Excellent.
Because they're leaving L.A. as the wildfires are going on.
Oh, you think they're ditching
their
city?
Yeah,
right
they're
now.
Leaving
wow,
their
that's
city.
That's deep.
You also hate the Rams? Is what what's happening there?
What's that?
I was like, so you also hate the Rams because they're moving that game?
Yeah, well, no, they have to.
I'm remaining conspicuously silent.
I'm steering it away. We had a few people texting.
Politicians get ripped for that.
Hey, we had a few people like, hey, I don't like that they left San Diego because I can't stop calling them the San Diego Chargers still.
I can't.
No, I won't either. I still screw up the Rams.
Yeah.
You know,
St. Louis?
Which is ironically, now that they're back in their normal place, I'm saying the St. Louis Rams.
Give it 20 years, we'll be back in St. Louis again.
Yeah, man.
Have to readjust.
Congratulations to you and me.
Woo, baby.
My team moves on and your bet stays alive.
I was river dancing my way to bed.
Did you guys, as neutral observers of the game, I know you're not really neutral, John, because on one side you hate Notre Dame, but then you've got a bet on them. So I know you've got emotions both ways.
Yeah.
I don't know where your feelings are on Notre Dame, Reggie, but as a neutral observer for both of you, like, I saw some people saying, like, this is one of the best games ever in postseason history. Like, it was a good game, and it was back and forth.
It wasn't played at a real high level at the quarterback position.
That's why we're
not getting a lot of that in this 4-team playoff. Yeah, I've been jokingly saying that we have now solid evidence that good quarterback play does not win championships in college.
Penn State's receivers had zero receptions.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
Zero. Mm-hmm. And I know Notre Dame's secondary is really good, but that's, wow. That's crazy.
I think for me, it solidified a belief that I've always had, which is like in college football specifically, a well-played game is fine, but an unhinged game is the best thing. And that felt like an unhinged game. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, man, directly into my veins. Yeah, a lot. I was, as I told you via text, I was waiting for the two-point shootout.
Yeah.
Like, I just wanted to go full insane.
Reggie checked on me with like 6 minutes to go in the game. He's like, how you doing, man? How you holding up? And I said, I'm actually pretty calm. It was even later than that. I think it was Notre Dame's second to last possession. You were checking him. I said, I'm actually pretty calm.
He was sitting as he was rubbing his Marcus Freeman bobblehead.
You know what I have in my pocket during the games? My ticket stub from the Catholics versus Convicts game.
Are you serious?
Wow. Yeah.
Is that encased in something?
No. I had it in a box full of ticket stubs that my ex-wife sent to me. It was in like one of our old storage units from, you know, three residences ago.
Yeah.
Back when we were married. I used to keep my ticket stubs to everything back in the day. Mm-hmm. And so it was in that box. So yeah, I probably
your boy was there.
Who?
Me.
Catholics versus Convicts?
Yeah.
Man, you and I wrote a lot of games together, unknowingly. Yeah.
That's one of the things I feel guilty about most in life is whenever I've cleaned out, canceled the storage unit, and I'm going through it, and I'm like, I've been paying $89 a month for this trash. This is the least financially responsible thing I've ever done. My ex-husband's ticket stubs are in here. What the hell am I doing with my life?
Don't worry, I was paying for the storage unit. Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, let's not get it twisted. So you were checking in on me. I felt good. But then Reggie goes, oh, well, how good are you going to feel when this overtime becomes a back and forth of 2-point conversions?
It wasn't that aggressive. In my defense, I said it will serve you well when that occurs.
Okay, thank you for correcting me.
You're welcome.
Deserve it. All right, boys. The floor is yours.
Let's go.
We are out of here.
Let's go.
Seth, antibodies, and I'll see you at 12:30 tomorrow.
Antibodies, and I hope you steer clear of Italians today.
Thank you very much.
Hates Italians.
It's not true.
A weird thing with him.
It's not true. People are going to think you're serious about that.
Which is weird with all your Sopranos.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not true.
I'm trying to make you attractive to Italian women.
It's not.
They're going to be like, oh, he hates
true.
Me, doesn't he?
I don't want to be Italian. I don't know where this is coming from. All right, we're done. We're out of time.